One of the things I really love about this congregation is our focus on missions that the elders, alongside the missions committee, would decide to take an entire month to focus on how God is working through us, or how we are able to participate with Him in sharing the good news of Jesus around the world. One of our values, one of the things that's up here right behind me, is that we are a people about loving our neighbors near and far. Can't think of a better way to demonstrate that love of our neighbors than by sharing the good news with them. In fact, that is the primary way in which we express our love to our neighbors. Neighbors near, local we might say, or global, is we share the gospel, the good news with them, that salvation is available through Jesus Christ. That is what we're about. Now there's a phrase, and maybe you are not familiar with this, you will be here in just a moment, but it's what we might call a phenomenon that has come about in the last maybe 20 years, maybe even just the last 15 years. The phrase is this: it's all about the cliques. Now, I'm not talking about cliques as in a group of people that shut themselves off from other people. That's not the kind of clique that I'm speaking of. It's all about the cliques. Here's the deal. We have a propensity to appreciate bad news more so than good news. In fact, Psychology Today wrote a report on this, and they mention that the number of bad news stories compared to the good news stories is 17 to 1. What's that about? Is it really the case in our world that there are 17 times more bad stories going on than there are good ones? We know that that's not the case. But what researchers are discovering is that, and have really known for quite a while, is that humanity appreciates, for some odd reason, these bad stories. They have a way of moving us. They do something to us emotionally. And so we actually end up gravitating toward the bad stories. And it's all about the clicks. And so if these news sites, if the media can get us to click on a story or share a story, then they are going to do it. They make money off it. It helps them with their businesses. And so they can see what humanity appreciates, and they sell toward that. 17 to 1 bad news compared to good news. Over the last couple years, there's also been this phenomenon that has come up, and it especially became a headline worthy, so to speak, just in the last year, and even in the last about 6 months: fake news. So you might have heard this story. This story was shared more than 100,000 times. As a matter of fact, this story in itself had people changing their 4th of July plans in the DFW area. You know why? Because there was a shark that was caught in Lake Louisville. Nobody wanted to go to the lake anymore. Why would they want to go to a shark-infested lake for family fun? Shared over and over again, stay away from the lake, because all of a sudden, somehow, there is now a shark. If there's one, there's likely more that have been passed on. And there's comments and discussion that you can find on social media about this shark that was caught in Lake Louisville. The problem is, there was no shark that was caught there. But man, did it get a lot of clicks and shares. Bad news spreads like wildfire, doesn't it? People talk about it. It does something within us. As a matter of fact, psychologists are seeing that we are moved, and it hits us when it's something negative, when it drives fear, more so than when a story or something that we absorb does something good within us. For instance, it helps us to feel joyful or happy or pleasure. We are more so motivated by fear than we are joy or things we might call positive emotions. And so they play into this. And bad news, it spreads like wildfire. Now, go over to Romans chapter 10 with me for just a moment. Romans 10, beginning at verse 11. Paul writes, as Scripture says, anyone who believes in him will never be put to shame. This is Romans 10, beginning at 11. Now, verse 12. For there is no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. That's incredible news right there, isn't it? Anyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. After Adam and Eve, sin, death, and destruction entered the world. Sometimes we use language like this to talk about our world post Adam and Eve eating of the fruit. It's broken. It's fractured. It's hurting. Paul claims here, good news. Salvation can come to those who call on the name of the Lord. Let's continue reading now. Verse 14. There's a logical progression here in this passage. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? Paul asks, and he continues the questions. And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can anyone preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. Gospel. Paul asks some questions. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? So it comes down to this, as we see it in the passage here in Romans 10. The good news is salvation is available to all of humanity. In this context, Jew and Gentile through Jesus Christ. It's available to all of us. And then, who's going to preach this good news? Who's going to share it with others? Who's going to proclaim it? That's the question. Who will do it? Verse 15, and how can anyone preach unless they are sent? The folks that we are talking about this month have been sent. They're sharing the message around the world, telling others about the salvation that comes through Jesus Christ. Now, with Romans 10, 11 through 15, it's really good to know the background of this passage. And so for just a moment, I'm going to ask that you turn over to Isaiah 52. Isaiah 52, beginning at verse 5. Isaiah 52, beginning at verse 5. We read there, and now what do I have here, declares the Lord? For my people have been taken away for nothing, and those who rule them mock, declares the Lord, and all day long my name is constantly blasphemed. That's verse 5 of Isaiah 52. What is going on here? Why are we reading these words in Isaiah 52? The Israelites had been captured and they were exiled by the Babylonians. Now, imagine if you are hanging out at your house and some soldiers come and they arrest you. They take you away not only from your house, not only from your community or your city, they take you from your country. Imagine this taking place. Holding on to your arm. Lifting up your kids. And taking you away from your home. Imagine the emotions that you would feel in that moment. Imagine the fear that you would have. Imagine the anger that would well up within you because somebody was taking you from your home. This is my home. This is where I live. This is my place. And somebody steps in and says, not anymore. That's what happened with the Israelites. Someone came in and said, this is no longer your territory. It's our territory. Grabbed them and took them out. The Israelites, the people that were promised a land flowing with milk and honey, a place that was promised to them by God, was now under the control of people like the Babylonians. What in the world? And now these people, they're living far away from home. Imagine that they were missing their home, missing what they were comfortable doing, missing their work, missing what they knew. Not only what they knew, but what God promised for them. Continuing on, verse 6. Therefore, my people will know my name. Therefore, in that day, they will know that it is I who foretold it. Yes, it is I. What is the day that they're referring to here in Isaiah? What is the day, in that day? Well, it's a reference to the day the Israelites will be delivered from the captivity that they have been experiencing. And then we see this, verse 7. How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings. That could be translated as who bring gospel, who bring good news, who proclaim salvation, who say to Zion, your God reigns. What Isaiah is talking about is that there's going to be a day coming for these people who have been exiled, taken from their home. There's going to be a day that the Lord is going to deliver them from that captivity and take them home, the place that their hearts had been longing for. And on the day that God delivers them from that exile, it's going to be like when a messenger leaves the battle site and goes to his home country and stands before the king and says, we've won. The victory is ours. No longer are we going to be beat up by these countries and these nations who have been taking advantage of us. Good news, we've won. So, think of what Paul is saying now in Romans chapter 10, verses 11 through 15. You see the parallel. How beautiful are the feet, Paul writes, of the one who brings good news. Just like that messenger left the battle site and went to his home country and said, good tidings, we've won. Our God reigns. So the ones who take the gospel to those who so desperately need to know about the deliverance from sin that comes through Jesus Christ, it's the same. Good news. Victory comes through Jesus Christ. Will you believe it? Will you own it? Will you have faith in it? Your God reigns. We're now going to hear from Robert and then from Alan. They're going to tell us a little bit more about the mission work that this congregation has the privilege of participating in.
Rob's talking about the good news. The good news is that we have a church here in Leander that has a heart for God, not only their heart, but their feet. And it's a very loving and giving congregation. God has blessed us all, and we have served others throughout the world with our blessings. And for that, we want to give God the glory. We always give the glory back to God. I want to tell you a little bit about our mission committee. We're trying to create knowledge, and with that knowledge, everybody would have an understanding. But our members of our mission committee are Richard and Linda Benskin, Alan Growler, Debbie Pennock, B.W. Pruitt, Kenny and Linda Revelle, Adam and Judy Sandoval, and myself. And the mission committee is co-chaired by Kenny and Adam. And all the work that the mission committee does is through the oversight of the elders, so the elders are informed and involved also. Generally speaking, we're meeting once a month on Tuesday evenings, and at that time, we're looking back at requests that have been sent in, mission works that are ongoing, looking at how to encourage our missionaries, and praying. Prayer is a very large part of all that we do. A lot of the members of the committee have actually served on foreign mission fields in one capacity or another, and their insight is very good for us. The committee strives to use the funds that we have been given wisely in planning and developing strong churches and programs that shows Christ's love and draw people closer to God. Once well established, a locals congregation should be able to thrive with substantial outside support. Our desire is to foster churches throughout the world that could be healthy churches and can in turn plant and foster other such churches. Very admirable, I think, to look at ways and programs that encourage the growth of other churches in the process. Also, the committee, we always try to keep funds available that can help fund mission trips for support visits or mission trips that members are involved in. And so if you have some desires and some to go and serve in a certain time at mission fields, make sure you fill out a request and give it to the mission committee. Main thing I want to ask everybody is to continually pray for our mission efforts around the world and locally. Prayer is God's work that we're doing, and it is the good news that we're trying to spread. So let's all keep that before God in prayer at all times.